visual exam for genital warts. You can often see them. They do look different than herpatic because sometimes it looks like a skin tag, but you can see sometimes it looks a little bit like a cauliflower, just a little, the lesions and how it is formed on the outer genitalia. Paps for women, basically, that is HPV screening. That's where we see a lot of cancer screening advertising. That's where the HPV can be done. There is an HPV test for certain ages that is done. We do know that there is a reflex test. So if we have someone that has, we choose to do the thin prep Pap test. And what this allows is it allows them to do the testing first for the HPV. If they find that it is positive, they can do a reflex test on that up to 21 days later, and that will let us know if it's a DNA test so that we can follow through with that. But that is usually typically in someone that is over the age of 21. There is no approved FDA testing methods for men. There is some research done, but in essence, to find out if there is that HPV, it would be a very painful scraping of the penile area to know if there is any kind of cell infections. Vaccines, there are several vaccines out there. There's been a lot of discussion. I know when it first came out, several of my OBGYNs felt like, hey, we did the vaccination for those that had Hep B. Why would we not provide this vaccine if it was needed to save our children? Especially if you have someone that maybe your daughter never had sex with anyone, but she happened to fall in love with a wonderful Christian young man who somewhere in his past had exposure. Why would we not test? What we came to the conclusion was that this is a very personal conversation. This is something that you should have with your pediatrician, that we were not going to recommend or deny whether or not someone should do that. But that was something that could be discussed and could, with good education, be a decision that a parent would make. So some choose to do it, some choose not to do it. Initially, many of my OBGYNs felt like it was very important. Now, some of them have stepped back from that a little bit, concerned that there's not been enough research. So it's still one of those areas of controversy where you can determine what your stance is, but in our particular location, we don't give it, and we do recommend that they seek guidance from a pediatrician or from their physician to determine whether or not they want to do that. The vaccine is designed to protect against 2 to 9 strains. I think a lot of times the education is that, oh, I got a shot, I'm not going to get an STD. Well, it doesn't even protect against all strains of the HPV, let alone it doesn't protect against herpes, it doesn't protect against some of the others. It does reduce possible HPV infection, but it does not guarantee that you will never get an infection during your life. And if there is any more questions about HPV, I will defer to our two physicians because there is just so much changing. I'm referring to two physicians. Are there other physicians in here that I'm not aware of? Okay, I know Sandy and Nicole. Okay. Treatment is liquid nitrogen or something called podophyllin. Liquid nitrogen, our dermatologist comes in, and literally it is just a couple squirts in the area, and sometimes it will not come back. It's not something that, you know, they necessarily say that you have to have, but emotionally a lot of times you want it to go away, and so it can be treated. There's also podophyllin, which is an interesting, highly potent, very awful-smelling little vial that they will actually put on the warts, and it kind of dries them up. My understanding is podophyllin is actually beetle juice that is harvested, and then it is used, but it does also take away the symptoms. It can grow back. A lot of times we do see, though, with one treatment, it doesn't come back again, and it does tend to give the emotional, the emotional care that someone needs. Abnormal Paps, obviously we're going to refer to a GYN. Now, some people have said, well, why take the liability of doing HPV? A lot of that does depend on if you've got a good network of physicians that will follow up if you do have an abnormal. If you have no one that you can refer an abnormal to, then you may have the liability. In our case, what we do is we will not have you as an STI client unless you will give us good, solid follow-up information. Now, what does that mean with today's clientele, especially if you are couch surfing and you sleep on a different couch every week. So we have to have not only a cell phone number, but we also have to have a physical address, because we're going to send a certified letter to your home addressing that you have an abnormal result if we cannot, after three attempts, get hold of you. And then that is documented in the chart, and the certified slip is also in there, so that if someone should say that they had an abnormal and nobody let them know, that we can know. The treatment in referring to a physician may be the burn, the laser, the freezing, the surgical burn. You may have heard, like, the LEAP procedure, colposcopy, et cetera. Viral hepatitis, we're just going to spend a couple of minutes on that. Things to know is Hep C, or Hep A, is the oral to anal contact. Hep B, vaginal, oral, or anal sex, blood, shared needles. And Hep C, which is most commonly spread through blood, but is also through shared needles. We see a lot of Hep C, and I think a lot of that has to do not just with the STI, but also the amount of drug use. So within the sex industry, those that are in our strip clubs or those that are prostituting, a lot of times there's a lot of drug co-mingled use and alcohol, and so we see a lot of Hep C from that specific arena. So we want to make sure that we are understanding. The only test for those is blood, but there is specific testing that very quickly can give you the information. We do want to make sure that with the Hep C, that we're making sure that they understand that there is that reactive and then there is that referral. And there is a lot of information out there right now on Hep C. It used to be Hep C, you thought liver damage, you're never going to come out of it. I don't know about you, but in almost all of the women's magazines now, there is information about the cure for Hep C. And what they're actually seeing is on some of the medications, it is reducing the viral load to indistinguishable levels. So it is as though it is eradicating it. So if you have someone that is positive for Hep C, it is so important to refer them so that they can move on to getting assessed as to whether or not they may be a candidate to receive that treatment. We do want to make sure they're referred. Molluscum contagiosum, that's an interesting viral disease that you may see on clients that will come in. People are sure that that this is something that's going to spread, and sometimes it will, especially if there is an immunosuppressancy that is in one of the clients. And so it can spread. It is not a sexually transmitted infection, typically in children. You will often see daycare outbreak or where children will get it on their hands or can get it around their underwear zone or something like that. But when you see it on the genital area and in adults, it is considered a sexually transmitted infection. And it's just a tiny little pinpoint. It has a little kind of dot in the middle. It almost looks like a little pustule where somebody put a pinprick and a little bit. It can sometimes be itchy. It can get infected when people mess with it or they pop it. But it kind of comes in waves that we'll see it. That does seem like with summer and with shaving, I would say that probably 99% of all of my clients, male and female, shave. And with the advent of shaving, you've got things like folliculitis, but you also have the transmission of herpes, a little more easy when that nick and then it's gone into other areas. So it does make it a little bit more vulnerable. Several of our physicians really recommend that individuals clip, they not shave, because it does help that folliculitis not be as detrimental. Visual exam is how you're going to know about molluscum. Usually your client coming in and saying, I need those to go away. And again, it is just a very simple, a topical application of Canthrone is what is needed. Talk about parasites for a little bit. I know that's such lovely. It makes us all start itching and start squeaming. But Trichomonas is one of those parasitical diseases. It is a nasty little parasite. And a lot of times when people come in, they complain of a lot of itching. And literally, it is just a tiny little parasite that wiggles around in the vagina or in the urethra and causes a lot of uncomfortable discharge. It almost is like a frothy discharge that is sort of a greenish, and it does have a bit of an odor, but it can be asymptomatic, but it can also cause just a lot of symptoms. Now, if you look at this particular picture, this is known as a strawberry cervix. You can see sort of the little dense, or not dense, but the little red petechiae kind of on that. And that is very classic of a cervix that is showing indications of the trichomonas. Some things to know: that there are 3.7 million infections. I don't know why, but for some reason this summer, I have had very many clients that have come in with a case of trich, and most all of them have talked about being on the river. I don't think you can get it from the river, but I think there's probably been a demographic and a population of very sexually active individuals that are crisscrossing, and then you've got wet swimsuits, you've got that wet, moist environment, and it just seems to be rampant. Symptoms in women: it can be that frothy, the green, strong odor, discomfort after urination, irritation, itching, and it can have lower abdominal pain. Symptoms in men: irritation inside the penis, mild discharge, and slight burning after urination or ejaculation. Again, it's a urine test that can be done. It is a little bit more expensive. And in your packet of information, you will see that we do not charge for our services, but we often ask for a donation to cover the cost of the labs. Trich for males is $25, but that is something that a lot of males will choose to make a donation to get that lab done, because it is expensive, because it is so uncomfortable to have. Vaginal swab is also another way that you can do it. It's much like the BV. If you're doing an exam anyway, you just take one of the Q-tips, you do a quick test. Again, you put a little indicator that actually pops up with two lines. One's your control line. The second one is actually showing you whether it's positive or negative. So within 10 minutes, I can let someone know if they've got trich. A liquid-based pap sometimes will pick it up, but not always. And then a wet mount slide definitely will. Metronidazole, again, that wonderful classification of drugs, 2 grams orally. It can leave a kind of a metallic taste if someone's had that drug. It's also something that's used to treat like amoeba or giardia or some of those others, but it's a specific class. And there can also be metronidazole, 5 milligrams twice a day for 7 days. Some of those other little parasites out there could be crabs, pubic lice, scabies. Topical medication can often be called in to make sure that someone gets comfort from that. All adults and adolescents should be tested at least once for HIV, according to the CDC. We know that annual chlamydia and gonorrhea screening is recommended for all women that are 25 years and under, or with every new partner. My daughter married when she was the age of 30, and she had gone in for her gynecologist. She probably doesn't want me telling this, but gone in for her gynecological appointment, and basically was told that she was crazy that she'd never been tested. And she said, well, I've not ever been sexually active, but I'm getting married. They wouldn't believe her. They said, you are the only Californian that can possibly not have an STD and have never been tested. But I think that's something that, you know, there is just this presumption that everyone has an STD. But I think it is important that to realize that in the healthcare profession, many people are aware of how many people are not screened. And if you've not been sexually active, you don't need to be screened unless you have been victimized, and then it's important to have that screening done. Abstaining from sex or reducing the number of partners correctly and consistently using condoms are all effective STI prevention strategies. This is according to the CDC. So that's the information. One of the things that we found is it important that we give information that is active, that is updated, and that is accurate. And what we have gravitated to now is to using the CDC fact sheets. You can get those off of the CDC. We always have to go in cautiously and carefully, because they are going to suggest in some situations that condoms will prevent in a certain arena. That is factual. And so we want to make sure that we're saying, is it worth this risk to use condoms in this area? But it is up-to-date, good information, and it does help take the liability off of if you're creating your own brochures. We're going to take just a quick stand up. Don't leave the room, stand up. But we're going to move on to the home stretch, and you're going to get to hear from Jordan, and she's going to talk a little bit about marketing and branding. So everybody just kind of stand up, and as my granddaughter says, shake your wiggles out.
You're having so much fun today. That last 2 hours probably wasn't the most fun you've ever had, but very informative at least, very informative. We make it as fun as possible. So like Carolyn said, I've been at Life Choices 4 years, started as an advocate volunteer, was hired as a receptionist, and then did client marketing and donor communications, and then just recently became the advancement director. I love Life Choices. I love what we do. I love what you guys do. And I'm super passionate about reaching my generation, about reaching millennials, and about reaching abortion-minded women and those that affect them. It's a very personal issue for me. I actually just this morning had breakfast with a friend that lives down here and is post-abortive, and good grief, I'm emotional. There's no... anyway, so it's a very personal matter to me, as I'm sure it is to lots of you. So... we will zip through this. This is a little bit more fun and exciting. And then just write down questions and we'll answer those afterwards. So we are certainly, even though I have a degree in public relations, that is certainly not like, I am not a mastermind in that. I am not an expert in that. It's a lot of learning as I go. But we know that we have three main groups that we're going to be marketing to as an organization such as ourselves, and that's going to start with your constituents, so those that are in your corner from the get-go, your board members, your major donors, your volunteers, any contracted workers, any medical volunteers. That's who we consider our constituents, people that we can kind of count on in the community, church liaisons, so on and so forth. We also have the community in general, so that's going to be people that you don't really know where they land. They could be on either side of the debate or the argument, and so you're just trying to reach them and to win their approval no matter where they are in their journey with you. School district board members, medical professionals, chamber members, et cetera, so forth. And then, of course, our clients or prospective clients that we are trying to reach. So I'm going to show you a really quick video that we just did about 3 years ago now, I guess. We actually reached out to some college students and we said, tell us how you would tell the story of Life Choices. What does Life Choices mean to you, from education in the schools and junior high all the way through to college age? What does that mean to you? And this is what they came up with. We know that heart stories are really what gets to the donor, but this is a really fun way for us to at any venue be able to share the mission of Life Choices without it being churchy, without it being super pro-life. It's just a very safe, fun way. So we are going to watch that now. Okay, I really don't know what's happening, but we will figure it out and we will go on and come back to this because it's a really great video. And I promise you're really going to enjoy it. So I promise I will play that. I don't know. No, it's embedded. And we played it earlier and it worked fine. So I apologize. I will show you that later when I can pull it back up. It'll be really great. You'll love it. Just be anticipating. It's like a preview before the feature film. So to talk to our constituents, again, that's your invested partners. We have a couple different ways that we reach out to them. How many of you guys have multiple websites for your organization? A few of you. So that's something we went to quite a few years ago before I ever came on staff. And as the former marketing person and now as the advancement director, I love it. I love having two websites. It's a little bit more work. It's a little bit more expense to set up. But what that does is it allows us to really share our message very openly and honestly. And I'm not having to constantly go back and forth between, well, what if an abortion-minded woman reads about our Walk for Life? Or what about if a mother reads about my Change for Life baby bottle campaign? So I don't have to be quite as careful in my messaging because I have a donor website and a client website. So I'm able to keep those separately. So what you're looking at now is a screenshot of our donor website. So just a really basic overview of who we are. So that way anyone that finds it, we're not shying away from being faith-based. We're not shying away from our core values. But we're saying them in a way that's very tangible, in a way that's easy to swallow. So we're just being really careful in our verbiage. So you can see at the top we have a way for them to donate, missions and values, ways to get involved, upcoming events. And then stories. We do a monthly blog, and we do client stories on that. So that's what our donor site is. And then we also do a Facebook page that is specific to donors. And on the website, let me go back and just let you guys know. What I've done on this website to kind of make it even a little bit more protected from my clients is we have made this what they call a non-index site. So what that means is Google isn't going to pull this site up. If someone Googles Life Choices Joplin, this site isn't going to come up for them. So that means what's going to come up is my client site, which is what I want to come up on Google, because that's where my abortion-minded women are most likely going to find us at. So it makes it a little hard. Sometimes I have donors call and they say, well, I found this site and this doesn't say anything about donating, or it doesn't say anything about the banquet, or da-da-da-da. So we've had to do some retraining. We have to get the website to them in more creative ways. But what that does is it protects us from clients stumbling upon it and then wondering, well, which organization is the real organization? We also have a Facebook page specific to donors. This is a pretty private page. I've turned off all check-in abilities so people can't rate us or check in at our location. Again, just protecting clients against themselves. We just had a month ago that a girl checked in a picture of her boyfriend standing in front of the building with a picture of the ultrasound, so excited that they were pregnant. Well, we want to encourage that excitement, but understanding that she doesn't necessarily realize who all could see that now that it's checked into our Facebook page, because she wasn't just posting it on her personal page. She had linked it to us directly. So anyone that looked at our page was going to see her picture and see her post. So I've turned off all of those settings so that people can't do that. So I've kept it pretty safe. No one can post on there without our approval, but that's what our Facebook page looks like. And then we also do an e-blast. I do a monthly e-blast to all of our donors, and that usually has a story, some sort of heart touch, upcoming events information, upcoming volunteer information, and that's what you see on the right hand of the screen is what our e-blast is. We also do annual reports. I heard someone last night call it an impact report. I love that name. I think that's a really beautiful way to label it, because that's really what you're showing is your impact of the year. We do these with our banquet every year. So this is the piece of literature that they're getting at the banquet, but we try to make it generic enough that we can use it throughout the rest of the year. And we do. This year we almost ran out of our banquet booklets because we hand them out in the community so much. So it's a way to dual purpose your budget a little bit. You're already spending design on an annual report to give to your donors at the banquet. Why not make it a little less event specific so that way it can be used year round, and then you're kind of stretching those dollars a little bit more. And then with the community, we try to do as much good community PR as possible, just showing that we're team players, that we want a good community, we want healthy community, we want a healthy family. A healthy family community. And so every time we do anything that we can think warrants a ribbon cutting or a meeting with the Chamber of Commerce or a press conference or a PR press release, we do it because we want to be in control of the press and make sure we have as much good press as possible. So this is a ribbon cutting that we did when we did an add-on. We also did one. Here's one at our college clinic. This is one at another satellite clinic that was about 20 miles away from our home base. And I really love this picture because these folks that you see holding the ribbon at the front, this community actually came to Life Choices. We had zero plans on going into their community to open a clinic. They actually came to us and they said, we think we have this issue. Our students can't get to you 20 miles away. We want you to open a clinic. And we were pretty hesitant about it and pretty like, oh, I don't know that that's going to work. We don't know. It's a very tight-knit community. It's a very closed community. And so these people in the front were part of a steering committee that we formed. So we went to movers and shakers in the community, and we said, okay, if you want this, you need to help us make it happen. And so they did a lot of the legwork for us. They made a lot of the connections. And this ribbon cutting that we had was the most well-attended ribbon cutting we had had to date for any clinic, any service, any add-on, because the people in the community got behind it because the movers and shakers that they looked up to were behind it. So we actually had those folks hold the ribbon instead of our staff because it was just a really special thing for them. And I think they were probably more excited about the ribbon cutting than we were. So just knowing to get the right people behind you and have the right Esters in your corner. And then this is our most recent one for our mobile unit. Which was a really exciting, that I think attendance definitely topped the Carthage ribbon cutting, which was really exciting to see. We had tons of great turnout in the community. And from people that maybe don't even typically align with us, they get behind the way we treat women and the way we treat young couples. And so they're able to support the care that we give, even if they don't necessarily agree with why we give it. So that was a really special thing. We're also a part of both about 3 ministerial alliances in our area. So we have one for Joplin, one for Carthage, and then Carthage actually has a Hispanic ministerial alliance. So we have a large Hispanic community there, a lot of Hispanic-specific churches, and so those pastors have their own ministerial alliance. So when we opened this clinic in their community, we realized we needed to bridge that gap, that there was a lot of mistrust there, and we really wanted to try and bridge that as best as possible. So we reached out to the Hispanic Ministerial Alliance, offered for them to come see our facility before it was even open. They had their meeting there, and they prayed a blessing over the clinic, and we were able to just debunk any myths that they might have about us, that we were going to treat their congregants a certain way, that we were going to turn them into the government, that we were going to track their IDs. We were able to debunk all of that and really start to build a bridge with that community. And then they prayed a blessing over us that night, and it was just the most powerful evening just to have this group of pastors and leaders and that community to be in our building. So always look for groups like that you can connect with that can be good advocates for you. We also pair up with a local Soroptimus group. I don't know how many of you guys have Soroptimus. It's kind of like Rotary specific to women, or kind of like, I can say this because my mom's a Soroptimus. It's kind of like a sorority for business women is what I joke with her about. So they can be a little bit more liberal leaning. They can be a little bit more women's rights, feminist mindset. But they love the way we treat women, and they love the people on staff, and they've seen that we are genuine people, and so they love us. And so they actually come in every year, once a year, and they bring lunch to our staff. They bring all these brand new baby supplies, and they build baby baskets for all of our clients. So they spend a lunch hour. We get them in our building. We get to chat with them, talk about their kids, talk about their work, talk about the other nonprofits they're involved in. These are really powerful women in the community, and they're building baby baskets, and they love it. So another great group to connect with. We're very involved with the area school districts. Anytime a school has a ribbon cutting or has an event, we try to get someone there just to show that we care about their students, that it's not a one-way relationship. We're not just expecting them to let us into their classrooms, but we're offering our services to them, too, in any way that we can. I have also had many meetings with area nurses, like school district nurses, which have been so beneficial to be able to show them our services, answer any questions they have, and promise them that I'm going to take really good care of their students, because those nurses are seeing students that aren't getting care and attention anywhere else a lot of times. And so they have big hearts, and being able to affirm what they do there and being able to promise them, hey, you give us a call and we're going to get that student in right away. We will do what it takes to take care of your kids. So pairing up with the school districts and making really good relations with the press. Anytime I think I'm going to have press in the building, we have media packets made up, so I'm giving them the information that I want them to have. I'm not leaving it up to them to write down our mission statement wrong or to write down who we are or what we do or what services we provide wrong. I put all of them in a packet very similar to the black packet you have in front of you, and I give that to them as soon as they walk in the door with their press release. So that way I'm controlling as much as possible the story that they're going to tell about us. And again, we don't shy away from having the media in our building. We invite that. We try to craft the stories specific to what we want. April is STI Awareness Month. That is a great month to reach out to the media and to say, hey, this is what we're doing. We're opening up our services, or we're reducing our fees, or, you know, whatever you can do to twist it to make it a news story. So last year we had free testing through the Missouri State Department of Health, and so we were able to say, hey, anyone that wants testing, come this month. It's free. And we had that picked up on all 4 TV stations, on every newspaper, and it was on their Facebook pages and their Twitter feeds. So anytime you can think, hey, this is something great for the community to know and it's good press, that's a great reason to get the media kind of in your building, win them over, become friends with them. So that way when something controversial comes up and they call you, you already have a rapport with them, and they already trust you. They already like you. You're courting them just like you would a client, truthfully. So this is, we do this a lot, and that's a picture of a interview that Carolyn was giving. You can see that we kind of set the scene there. We had it exactly where we wanted the interview to be, so when the reporter walked in, all she had to do was set up her camera where I directed her. Carolyn plopped down, we did the interview, and it took all the guesswork out of it for the reporter. So let's talk about clients. That's really the meat of the discussion here. When we're looking at marketing to clients, we really decided that we had 4 possible demographics that we could focus our marketing to. abortion-determined men and women, anyone facing an unplanned pregnancy, anyone needing STI testing, and families needing social services. Now, I know we and probably all of you guys will see all four of these people every day. We are not saying that we don't want to see these people. We know these people need our services. But with a small marketing budget, we really had to decide where to focus that. And so we decided the best bang for our buck, why we do what we do, is to focus on the abortion-determined woman, her partner, and anyone else in her life that could affect her decision-making. So whether that's her best friend, her mom, her sister, her aunt, her professor, her mentor, those were the people that we really wanted to focus our marketing to. And so when we kind of came to that realization, we realized that our current marketing wasn't necessarily accomplishing that. We decided we needed to really consider our clinic name, our branding and our colors, and our presence in the community. And so to do this, we had a focus group of young professionals, of millennials, that work in marketing and branding, not in a faith-based specter. So some of them were believers, some of them we weren't really sure.